best with the best, man, because the best don't mess.
It's time to talk.
Your thoughts.
I do genuinely think it does that with the parents.
For me, he was the bridge between myself and my untapped potential.
Flattery will get you nowhere in here.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I couldn't even answer her because, you know what, she wasn't wrong.
The voice of Cork.
Be part of the conversation as always. The Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Text 0868104106. Paperwise this morning, they're talking about floods. We haven't been found wanting in that department ourselves, to be honest. But the front of the mail this morning talks primarily about areas like Wexford, Carlow, Wicklow and Dublin. Although we got a fair old dump of it and it led to trapped water and flooding as well. In fact, the BBC yesterday, and I heard a report where they were saying that February will be known as the month of the mud. For obvious reasons. So they're warning in the mail today of a third deluge striking. In fact, you can really put it all in perspective with a post over the weekend on socials by Pamela Morrissey from Soapy Brown, where she's got a photograph of, yeah, flooding again, in spite of all of the work on Morrison's Quay. She says 2 years of construction for flood prevention is going well in Morrison's Island anyway. Smiley face, laughy emoji, more money well spent because, again, completely underwater. Now, maybe it's not finished there. And when it is completely finished and we get all of the boardwalk and all that kind of stuff, maybe that will be the end of flooding in that particular area. But another story on Lee's side that makes the front of the Echo, and this has got to have to do literally with manpower hours. It's the number of checkpoints, or the drop in checkpoints for drink driving and drug testing, down sharply year on year compared with 12 months ago. It's data released by An Garda Síochána, and the Echo has it. They talk about an 11% fall in the number of intoxication testing checkpoints carried out in the city, and a 7% fall in the county. So they're looking at 810 checkpoints for drink driving, drug driving carried out within 12 months, which was for 2024, but dropping from 810 to 720. And the county had the same kind of a drop in checkpoints as well. So that needs to be watched, I suppose, if at all possible. And then there's a lot of other stark statistics making many of the papers this morning, including the broadsheets like The Examiner and The Sun, that talks of the 31 weapons that have been seized from school kids. I mean, it's the kind of stuff you hear coming out of America. But it's believed that students were involved in almost all of the cases. 31 incidents of, and I'm talking about knives and firearms. Each case involved the possession of a weapon or a firearm. And you know, you might need reminding, like I did, last March of last year, there was an 11-year-old pupil at a national school in Dublin stabbed by another student. Now, his injuries were non-life-threatening, but he could have been killed. A knife is a knife is a knife. So the examiners say that weapons incidents are up 93% in Irish schools. Last year, there were over three times the number of incidents than, say, for instance, take example, maybe 2021. So these kind of nightmares that we're watching out for, according to the quotes in this morning's examiner, are the stuff that we usually be watching on our television screens. We would never have thought we'd be seeing them in Ireland, particularly in Irish schools. Guns have been found on school premises. Children have been suspended for carrying knives or scissors as weapons. And these are places that should be deemed as a safe haven for children, right? There are other stories then that make the paper. Some of them did result in jail sentences. You'll remember Martin Lyne. He died from one punch assault. He was getting out of a taxi back in 2023. You might remember that. A fellow called Christopher O'Neill went down for 6 years for killing him. He pleaded guilty to manslaughter. Now, the family had appealed the one punch killer's sentence, but the DPP has said that it won't be appealing the 6 year sentence. So that has very much upset the family. And Brenda Power has an article in this morning's Mail where she talks in the headline, "Don't put killers' rights above victims' welfare." Just in general, of course, that should be the mantra, that criminals' rights in general should not be put ahead of the victim's welfare. First and foremost, in all court, well, firstly, you have to be innocent till proven guilty. But after that, then, proper sentencing, please. You get an example of the relief regarding a sentence then in the front of the Mirror today, where a woman, I was talking about this recently, it's a Mirror story of a woman, she was savagely beaten by her ex-partner, typical example, with a golf club. She has now been told that she will never have to see him again, and he'll have to abide by this. Now, Mark Conway got 6 years jail, but also has a lifetime ban imposed on him for ever contacting her again. And were he to do that in any way, shape or fashion, she just needs to pick up the phone and he'll be back in court again to answer that breach of the fact that he's not allowed to contact her in any kind of way ever again. We have way too much domestic abuse horrors happening in this country, and we see them in court reports. You may recall a story that I dealt with, I don't know, was it 4 months, 6 months ago? Marry Me Chippy, that graffiti. You'll see it in not just in one part of the city, but also a lot of other Marry Me Chippies in other locations across the city. But there was one particular incident that just pushed the Gardaí over the edge, and that was down in Penrose Wharf, along the roof of Penrose Wharf, where an individual climbed up and he spray-painted Marry Me Chippy. That's a fellow by the name of John Barrow from Glencree Crescent in Cork. He was on the air with me some months ago, and whoever he was with, some friend of his, put him on the phone to me. But he was before the courts, 22 years old. He admitted responsibility for that message, Marry Me Chippy. Some kind of a marriage proposal, I suppose. But they figured that there was about €6,500 worth of criminal damage done. But anyway, he was before the courts. And he brought with him €1,000 in respect of the damage. Apparently, the court reports were saying that he'd raised €1,000 compensation from his social welfare payments and that he would raise more money. So the judge has put it back until April to allow time for this to be done. I don't know if he's going to get to the €6,500 mark, but I imagine he's going to have a good go in it. He was spray painting Marry Me Chippy and caused damage to the roof in Penmore's Wharf. So that's the story that was making the court reports in the Examiner over the weekend. And then there's other eye-watering amounts of money online, where the Mirror is telling us of the amount of money that's being spent on asylum seekers, primarily international protection orders, individuals coming into Ireland from places like Somalia, which is first, Nigeria, which is second, Pakistan, which is third, and Afghanistan, which is fourth. Now, you look at the average length of stay that somebody in an international protection centre is staying in, it's just over 2 years. And then we do find that in the vast majority of international protection applications to remain, those are refused. But the money involved is absolutely eye-watering. It was just over €1 billion in 2024. It has now increased to €1.2 billion. So it's up another $195 million for asylum seekers from 2024 to 2025. And this works out as a daily average spend of nearly €3.3 million a day. How is this going to be sustainable? Ken O'Flynn actually got the statistics and a question from the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, outlining how, just breaking it all down with regards to, you know, where they're staying, the management of the facilities, the utilities that involved, you know, transport, food, all sorts of stuff. There's 33,000 people seeking international protection. And we have 312 international protection accommodation services around the country. And an awful lot of them are private, of course. But 33,000. And bizarrely, the number is, so on one hand, the number is down on 2024, but the actual cost is up on 2024. An extra $195 million. So that's what is coming in for last year, $1.2 billion. No idea what it will be for 2026. We'll have to wait and see on that one. And then there's another interesting number, and this is a six-figure amount that I saw at the weekend. I don't know if you're aware of that, because the school actually isn't named. But the Examiner reports that the guards are investigating the disappearance of a substantial sum of money from a school in Cork City. So if they say that it's a six-figure sum, it means it's at least or north of €100,000. So this is the figure that they're saying, a six-figure sum. It's a primary school on the south side of the city. And by all accounts, it's believed that the funds disappeared over a lengthy period of time. It wasn't one incident over a lengthy period of time, but it only came to the attention of the school management in recent months. So that's kind of early news, early doors on that story. I'm quite sure there'll be updates on that one. But also at the weekend, Cork Bureau reported a lovely, lovely story of a wonderful woman. And she is the nun who founded Edel House, the homeless charity, back in 1972. Sister Hickey. And she celebrated at the weekend her 108th birthday. And I know I'm a little late because it happened over the weekend, But on behalf of everybody, I want to pass on happy birthday greetings to Sister Hickey. She opened the original Edel House on Dyke Parade and laid the ground for it then. And many decades later, it's now situated on Grattan Street. And they do incredible work helping hundreds of women and children escape all sorts of difficulties in their life. And there's a poignant story. It's a story of heartbreak, of course, for the family, but unbelievable love. And it's a story from the Mirror of a wonderful Cork couple who passed away within hours of each other. And I just want to pass on our condolences to all of the families and friends of Jim and Josie Brady from Glanmire, who passed away peacefully at the CUH. One of them passed away on Monday and the other passed away on Tuesday. Dearly loved parents of so many and sadly, sadly missed. But extra poignant, like heartbreak, really, for the family of this lovely, kind and supportive couple who literally died within hours of each other. Meanwhile, of course, if you look at Dáil Éireann, this is the... I mean, I read every word of both of these articles, one from The Examiner and one from The Sun this morning. It's the cost of Bev or having a drink or a glass of wine or maybe a bit of food in the Dáil Éireann restaurants. And to be honest with you, if I'm going to be 100% honest about this, it's actually dearer than I thought it would be. I thought everything was cheap as chips there. Now, it's certainly cheaper than, say, restaurants outside of Leinster House or around Dublin. But they have to pay slightly more now because their food costs have gone up. And they give an example of it. This is the members' restaurant. Soup is now £5.50, up from a fiver. Deep-fried calamari with lemon and garlic alioli will set you back £9.50. Pricey enough now for a starter, I suppose. A prime beef burger will now set them back £13.80. Now, there will be lots of trimmings with the burger, you can be sure of it. So that's a lot cheaper. I mean, you'd pay £16.50, £18.50, maybe €19 for a decent burger with all of the trimmings. And desserts now go up to €5.80, which is very interesting considering at the weekend we got, I don't know, man, was it €9? I'd have to actually check for a fairly thin sliver of apple tart with a small little ramekin of ice cream. That was definitely €8.50, €9. So if they're getting the same kind of thing for £5.50, then they're away in a hack. So if you look at it then, soup, a main course and a dessert in the restaurant will come in at €25. So that's pretty good when you look at it like that, isn't it? I mean, for instance, The Examiner picks up and it says in the Dáil restaurant, members restaurant, a char-grilled sirloin ribeye or a ribeye, the sirloin or the ribeye with fries. I'm quite sure it comes with a little more than that. €20.50. Now, that's €28 all day long, isn't it, on average? So they're still doing quite well, actually. A pan roasted lamb rump, €18.50. So the dinners are fairly cheap, aren't they, by comparison? But one thing that hasn't gone up is wine. They haven't touched it because they love to quaff their Merlot or their Sauvignon Blanc. €6.60. What is the average price of a glass of wine now in a hostelry or indeed in a restaurant on Leaside? Say, for instance, a Sauvignon Blanc. Would it be a lot more than €6.60? I would say you wouldn't get anything cheaper than €8. And in some places you could pay €12, €13 for a glass of it. But in the Dáil bar and restaurant, you can get a whole bottle of it for €25. So they're still doing well there. But at the same time, there is a little hike. One man who has, well, two men actually, who have no issue with regards to the cost of anything. One is the billionaire James Dyson. He makes The Examiner because he's got himself planning permission now to put in a helipad. Of course, he bought a Ballinatrae house and the entire estate on the banks of the Blackwater, back in 2024 for $30 billion. He paid a handy price, but it's an incredible house and gardens. And he recently put in a tennis court. And all of this, of course, is on the hand dryers and the Dyson vacuums and the handheld ones that we've been buying down through the years. So the four that I bought, all of which broke apart, pieces fell off it. I just don't know what it is about them, but everybody loves them. And I suppose when they're brand new, they probably aren't too bad at all. But my experience with them has been quite negative. But that's just the way it goes. So all of those vacuum cleaners are buying helipads. And the other one then, of course, is to do with Cristiano Ronaldo. I had to double check this with Rory, and he was as flabbergasted as me. Cristiano Ronaldo is now earning €565,000 a day. 565,000 euro a day. He's on 210 million euro a year. And he's playing, of course, for Al Nassr. And he's given out to them. Now, he's not given out about his wages. He's given out about the fact that they won't buy in any players to boost his chances of getting 1,000 career goals. But could you imagine living with the worry and the stress of having to try and spend 565 euro a day? I mean, you would be absolutely exhausted coming up with things to buy. Never mind on an annual basis of having 210 million euro trousered every calendar year. Would you think he gives away an awful lot of it? I mean, he could, like. No one needs that kind of money. I'd be worn out trying to think of things to spend. You might be fine for a week or two, or maybe a month, but then you'd give up and you'd just claim defeat.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Morning all. I had an interesting watch at the weekend. The videographer and podcaster, Kevin Collins, put up yet another video on our city. And to be honest with you, while he was trying to accentuate the positive as to how things could be an awful lot better, a lot of it was fairly depressing with regards to what he had to say. He says things about Cork City where he says it never reached its true potential. He actually says in the video, which I will share, that we need an intervention. And we need to confront the decision makers on Lee side. Interestingly, he believes that our councillors are poorly paid at 28 grand a year. We need full-time salaried councillors who are well paid. And he's very critical of Cork City Hall from the top down. He says that City Hall itself is top heavy with administration. There are too many people behind desks. Nobody's fixing things. And we just engage in a system of press releases in a scruffy city. He says that city management are actually indifferent to the people living here. And he gives many different videoed examples of that. And to be honest with you, some of his video incorporates CGI and image changes, which look incredible, except they're not real. But they could be how Cork City could actually look with a bit of love and serious commitment. He joins me by phone this morning. Kev, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
It was extraordinary to watch it and to see you break it down into particular chapters, if you like, of our city. But we never reached our true potential and we need an intervention. Unpack that for me.
Yeah, I mean, Cork is my home. It's where I live and I want to see it at its peak, at its prime. And when I do see really low-hanging fruit about like the clutter in the city or the state of the buildings and the council not being able to orchestrate simple things like painting, it's not revolutionary to apply a nice coat of paint. So I feel like there's a real disconnection between what the people want, which is, you know, the fundamental basic day-to-day things that work and that have a positive influence on people's lives, and what the council are delivering. They're very good at delivering tentpole projects like the Marina Park is a super example of where the city gets it right. And that's the point, because if they can do something once every couple of years, then why can't they do smaller, meaningful things every couple of months? Something that says, the streets or the parks or the paint or the lighting. We could try and capture what is working, speed it up, and roll out that mindset constantly. Because I think in City Hall, there does need to be a mindset. And when I say about having an intervention, I think there's a disconnection with how City Hall perceive themselves versus how they are perceived.
How do they perceive themselves? Because in your video, you say that they believe they're doing a great job.
Yes, they put out some odd press releases at the tail end of last year saying that they weren't in it for the accolades. The accolades don't come anyway, and listing all the capital projects that they had embarked on. But the city has to grow, so capital projects will get done regardless. It's just a matter of doing the things, I suppose, that people want them to do. And that seemed really simple, like the absence of a public toilet, a working public toilet in the city, or the Marina Park. Mm. These are things that really affect how people can use the space. And there doesn't seem to be the will to do it. They have the talent and they have the funding, but I'm not sure where the will to get these things done.
But they don't have the staff, as you correctly point out. Everything has to be contracted or put out to tender. They actually own nothing with regards to that. You know, they'd neither the manpower nor the equipment, right?
Yes, yes. So there are systemic problems with how City Hall is run. It's not really how you would see, you know, having traveled around and being interested in urban planning in other cities, this typically isn't your normal run-of-the-mill city. Usually cities have staff and equipment so they can go out and do things rapidly and put stuff together, whereas there's a long procurement process in Cork to get people to do certain tasks, and equipment has to be rented, fencing has to be rented. But because, you know, it's a city and it's growing, they should probably have that equipment and they should probably have enough staff on a retainer that things can be done rapidly.
Well, would you acknowledge, though, that we have a sanitation department that, by and large, keeps the city clean? They do good work.
100%. If there isn't a morning in town where I don't see somebody sweeping the streets, it will be a surprise.
But when you look at, say, for instance, the management structure, you say it's top heavy with admin, too many people behind desks. Are you assuming that they're doing nothing?
I'm looking at the output, Neil. So again, it's not a personal dig at these people. It's looking at the output and looking at the state of the city compared to others. So it's definitely not personal. It's really about accountability. I think they're different. The responsibility doesn't stop at the walls of the building. So I don't think there should be an expectation on people who live in Cork, and if they're angry at City Hall, that their frustration is directed towards the columns and the building itself. No, there's people inside the building and the buck has to stop with them. So it really is looking at the executive management. They are the people who are responsible for the structures and the systems that the city operates within, and it's the structures and the systems that need to be fixed.
Looking at their budget, it's something in the region of 131 million per year on staff and pensions. Do you regard that as being value for money, 131 million a year on staff and pensions?
I would regard it as being value for money if the basics were done correctly.
Okay.
I think that's where they need to excel.
Okay, so there are some examples that you gave, which is quite extraordinary, because I remember the chief executive, Valerie O'Sullivan, saying at the time with regards to Bishop Lucy Park that she was proud of the park, and then made an astonishing statement where she said only a minority didn't like it. I have to say, with all due respect, that is not a true statement. It was not only a minority who didn't like it. Is it a case that she doesn't see that it was a lot more than a minority hate this gravel and concrete?
I think the CEO, in this instance, made themselves a martyr, right? I think they put themselves out there to protect City Hall, and that's a very admirable thing to do. But it probably wasn't the best approach. I think acknowledging the feedback a bit more wholeheartedly would have put people's minds at ease and say, well, City Hall is in step with the people. They see what the people see. By dismissing it outright, by declaring pride in the park, it just gave people the feeling that this is a closed loop, and closed loops are just generally unhealthy for.
And is that the disconnect that you're talking about? Would it made more sense for them to come out and say, hold our hands up, we got it wrong, you don't like it, we're sorry? Because I visited again recently, and it's only getting worse, not better. It's a really, really serious own goal.
Yeah, I think it's good to be accountable, right? People want to see the City Hall as accountable. And even if nothing changed, if they had acknowledged people's sentiments, I think that would have been a better outcome. It was actually that day that it came out in the Echo that I started making this video, because it upset me so much. I was in Dunn's in Merchants Quay, and when I saw that they were proud of the park, I did a double take. I was like, okay, well, I think we need to talk about this a little bit more.
Yeah, okay. You hone in on other aspects, and you know, obviously we can talk all day about the cost of the fireman's hut or the robot trees, but they're well discussed at this stage. When you talk about the nighttime economy, or Cork being a cultural city, you claim that we're not a cultural city and we don't have a nighttime economy.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I claim. I think the Crawford Art Gallery is a good example of that. It's been closed coming up on 2 years. Work hasn't started. Nobody thought to put a temporary space. I know there were discussions when they were talking about closing it for renovations that they would have a temporary gallery. That never came to be. And I'm looking around saying, what are Cork's other cultural institutions? Where do I want to go at night if I want to enjoy culture? The English Market closes at 5:30, at 6. The Crawford Gallery is going to be closed for maybe 5 or 6 years. I'm looking for the culture, for sure.
Forgive me now, but I just, after I watched what you had to say, obviously I spent some time thinking about it, and I did come up with quite a number of things, actually, that wouldn't be happening without the blessing or perhaps the support of City Hall, City Management and the councillors. They include, I'd like you to respond to this, the Choral Festival, the Jazz Festival, the Folk Festival, the Food Festival, the Film Festival, Culture Night, the planned restoration of the butter market, the rebuilding of Shandon, the Docklands investment, Heritage Week, Corkmas, the Elizabethan Fort, which is superb, the maintenance of Fitzgerald's Park. All of those are positive, surely. And that's a lengthy list of stuff that gets done.
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't say that that's necessarily culture that you go in and just engage with in the evenings. The festivals, certainly. But the festivals were happening pre this pilot, the Choral Festival and the Jazz Festival. And those have been happening for decades. The Docklands, that's all really positive. I suppose maybe we have just two different meanings of what just absorbing culture is in the evening. But you go and there's something to do. There's like free events. It's lively. I guess the problem with the music, and it's wonderful trad music, but that's usually confined to pubs. It's not exactly for families to go in because you can't have under 18-year-olds. So it's immediately excluding some people. So it's kind of culture that's free and accessible to everyone. And it's not just an event that you have to pay for.
Yeah.
It's something that you can just be around.
Yeah, okay. One part of your video is very, very powerful, where you describe the beautiful buildings that we have, but they're masked. And then you take in the video off all of the layers of paint and dirt and dishevelment and reveal the bricks of the original buildings and how beautiful they all could be if they got a bit of TLC. You're talking about Patrick Street there? Are you talking about, say, for instance, the North Main Street, South Main Street, areas of the Mall, Grand Parade, those kind of areas?
Yeah, in the video specifically, it was with North Main Street. And really, Neil, what got me thinking about that was the building where Easton's is now. It used to be the Victoria Hotel. And, you know, that was covered with paint. And I'm not sure anybody knew there was this beautiful limestone under it.
Gorgeous.
So there's more examples of that around the place. It's not always going to be like beautiful limestone, but there is beautiful architecture, architrave. And the buildings were covered for a very valid reason. Obviously, the climate here is pretty wet and damp, so they're done to waterproof it. But in the last decade, we've had a lot of different technology. So you can have breathable sealers and you can leave these buildings exposed if you want. There's a great example on Douglas Street near the flower shop at the end. That was rendered over and they exposed the brick only about 2 years ago and it's absolutely stunning. And I would love to see that kind of duplicated more.
How are you going to do that though if they're privately owned or they're not know who owns them or they're owned by pension trusts or overseas or just... they're privately owned by individuals and companies. It's their property.
Yes, indeed. So I don't think I have notions in thinking that City Hall should have a spreadsheet with the details of owner buildings. You know, if that's not an exercise that's been done, that's an exercise someone needs to start doing today. And when City Hall have a grant, like say for they have for St. Patrick Street, where they will give them a proportion of the money to have the paint, they would simply tap into a different grant, which is like a facade renewal grant.
Are you saying they tried to do this before, did they?
So North Main Street just finished, but it was a painting scheme. But I think they only painted 5 buildings and there's over 100 on the street.
Okay.
So it's the opposite of paint. What we want to do North Main Street is take the paint off the buildings. But really, we can't just rely on, you know, Red FM or Cork BO to like cascade the message that there's a painting grant. City Hall needs to have a list of building owners and be contacting them directly saying, are you aware this is an option? You can have reduced hoarding fees, half the percentage of the cost of paint or whatever it be.
What if they don't have the money though?
Then that's okay. It's not for everyone. I mean, if the person can't afford to fork up their proportion of the money, then, you know, I don't think there's anything we can do about that. But presumably some people will. And if we can make incremental gains, Neil, I mean, if it's, I mean, it can start in 5 weeks or it can start in 5 years. But if we started the scheme and over 5 years we got, you know, 50 properties, even just 10 a year, that would be 50 more beautiful urban fabrics.
I would love to see that. I would so love to see that. In part of what you did, you compared St. Patrick Street with, you know, 2025 going to 2026 with 2006, did you?
Yes, yeah.
Why did you do that?
Because of the colour in the buildings in 2006. And I made the painting pan a video about a year ago now. And I don't know, some people are lost with the idea that colour would detract from it or how could it. But we only have to go back to 2006 to see when the buildings had lots of colour. So it's been
How did that happen then? Because when I saw the 2006 photograph of Patrick Street, I thought that was computer generated. But the buildings were that beautiful 20 years ago. That why wasn't that maintained?
And that's a great question. And this is the kind of dialogue Borkonians need to be having. Why is it in an era where Ireland is getting, you know, richer on paper, our building quality and fabric and look getting poorer and poorer? So these are questions that we need to ask, and, you know, we need to address it because we want to, every year we want to see things getting better, not worse.
Okay. So those that we put in, we elect to do that work on our behalf, right? As in city councillors. You believe, though, that they're badly paid, that they should be full-timed, salaried, because they have to have other work. This is a part-time job to them. Am I quoting you right?
It's a part-time job for some of them, yes. So this is from my first-hand experience. After the first video, I've had the opportunity of meeting with a lot of councillors, and last night as well, I got to meet with a couple. So a lot of them do it. It's €28,000 is the salary. So if they have perhaps a family, it's really hard to support a family and pay rent on that. So they do it in addition to something else. But really, it's a very important job being the policymaker for the city. And that really, I think, warrants the appropriate salary. And when I'm looking at it in the video, Neil, again, if City Hall is spending €130 million on salaries and pensions, but the combined total of all the councillors is 1.2 million. That's 0.3% of the city budget. So
wow, that is very low for the jobs that we expect them to do. 1.2 million out of a budget of 131 million for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, the budget is 362 million. It's City Hall spends.
Sorry, I'm talking about the staff. I'm talking about the staffing. Yeah, the entire budget is over 300 million on a city of population of, what would you estimate, 220, 230,000, that kind of way?
Yeah, I'd say you're spot on. About 220, I think, was the 2024 census or something.
When you look at those numbers, doesn't it seem as if 300 and odd million is plenty money to spend and get it right?
It does, absolutely. It's just where the money gets lost, because we have the talent. But I think it gets lost somewhere in red tape. I think there's so much bureaucracy, it's stifling progress. So we can have all the funding in the world and we can have all the best people around the table. But if everything gets stalled at every junction, then the system is the problem.
Okay.
And that's really what I want the executive team to focus on. It really moves it away from just rhetoric if they can actually say we're affecting change on the systems that are holding Cork back. Rather than just looking at the tail end of everything.
Yeah, is it that there are too many press releases or glossy brochures and not enough action?
There are certainly there's certainly a lot of that. Yeah, I mean, other cities seem to be just more effective. They're not magical. That's it. They're not richer. They're just better at turning decisions into action.
Where are you comparing it with Dublin, for instance? Is it?
Certainly Dublin has a lot going on just in terms of the nighttime economy, and, you know, it's urban spaces, it's parks. I was really disappointed to hear that the park that they were going to put up in Nash's Boreen is going to take over 10 years to deliver. I don't think that's acceptable.
Well, they're busy cutting down trees at the moment, as you know.
Yes. Mm. There's a lot of own goals there, and I don't know. I think if they can take a step back and have a look at things the way everybody else sees it, maybe they'd be more inclined to make a change. I really think the first step for them is to acknowledge that there's a systemic problem. until they do that, unless they have this kind of come to Jesus moment, it'll be hard to move the needle.
Okay. We had an opportunity to move that needle, though, and people voted against it, and that was the directly elected mayor. Would that have been a game changer if it had happened, do you think?
A game changer? Not quite, but it certainly would have given the people more direct line to democracy, which is what we need. We need our voices to be reverberating louder around City Hall. So we'd still have a CEO, and we'd also have a directly elected Lord Mayor. The directly elected Lord Mayor has more direct connections to Dublin as well. So in terms of funding and projects and communicating the messaging of Corkonians, it would have been the right thing. We can have a directly elected mayor. It just takes a plebiscite in Dublin. It doesn't even require another vote here. So if that were to happen, that really is just back-end paperwork that our politicians can carry out.
Do you would you be blaming city management, say, for instance, on the 10th? We're now at the 10th anniversary of the event centre that never happened, the 10th anniversary of the sod turning. Using that one as an example of their ineptitude or tardiness?
Not specifically. I think the video really looks at its link with Dublin, like Cork's link almost as a child of Dublin. And most people want the same outcomes. People want a place to go and see concerts and music in the event centres. Families want safe, pleasant places to go. Dog owners want places they can walk their dog. So everybody wants the same thing, City Hall included. But sometimes it seems to be too complicated to achieve. In my head, it's not. We need to reframe the conversation, because if we keep saying it's complicated or there's issues, we won't achieve anything. So we need to have that mindset change.
Okay, I'd love to get people's thoughts on this. Text 0868104106. So for you, would it be a city with lots of green space, with lots of greenery that was missed in Bishop Lucy Park, obviously, because it's brutalistic. It's like something from the 50s. It's like out of communist Russia. But you want more green spaces. You want more. Would you like to see people living in the city, rearing family and children in the city?
Absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't like more trees? Who wouldn't like more flowers? Who wouldn't like to see a more effective use of space? I think the city is a very sterile place. It's very difficult if you live above. I mean, there's very few people live in there to begin with. Most of the upper floors are vacant, and that's a problem in and of itself.
Yeah.
There's a great initiative going on in Limerick to resolve that problem. You know, we fly people to Boston and to China for St. Patrick's Day. Take a trip to Limerick. Look at what they're doing there with their kind of urban plan to get people living in the city. That's definitely something that could be copied. And we don't have a lot of space in Cork for parks. So the little verges and the small areas where we can put some grass and trees and flowers, it might only be a little pocket park, but I think that will be the approach to have. I don't know if there's room for a tentpole park like I'm proposing, but there's definitely room for little green verges.
What is a tentpole park? I did see a CGI computer image of what we would know as the old revenue building there on Sullivan's Quay, am I right? Sullivan's Quay, massive, big, empty. You did an image of how that would look like if it was a city centre park, and it was beautiful beyond words.
Absolutely. It's disappointing that that's been vacant for, I don't know, 10 years. I suppose if they put an interim park in there, people probably would have balked at the idea of that being closed. So maybe that's why they didn't. But I reimagined where the event centre was going. I reimagined that space.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the two only large kind of spaces in the city centre.
Would you prefer to see the site there, which is privately owned, incidentally, as a park, and the event centre down the Docklands or down the marina, or, as is being suggested now, the Cork Marina Market is planning to do their own 6,000-seater at some stage for be live events, going to put a big food hall down there, they're going to build a hotel down there, a 6,000-seater. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the race is on, Neil. I don't think that Cork is going to be having two event centres. So whoever breaks ground first, obviously the official one, the government one, has gone back out to tender. And the one that's of a private enterprise by the guy who owns the Marina Market, that's already had its drawings done up and is going through the motions. So it really depends on...
So if they break ground first, the others can just forget about it.
I think so, unless they're going to go ahead with two, but I don't think the city can sustain two event centres running like concurrently. With regards to the location, I think the Docklands is better for, you know, having 5,000 people flowing out onto South Main Street is going to be quite tight there. I mean, that's not, that street isn't pedestrianized. There's cars going past. When I go to stuff at the Three Arena or the Point up in Dublin, you know, it's kind of out onto a big open plaza, and it needs it because you have so many people spilling out there. As well, in terms of getting in all that staging, all the artists, music equipment and audiovisual stuff, it's tight. You know, those corners at the end of Barrack Street, it's a challenge to have an event centre there.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens there. You don't think that while we do seem to like to build things, that all too often, I'm just curious to your thoughts finally, that by and large it seems to be student accommodation, and student accommodation is servicing the needs of UCC or English language schools or MTU. Is there too much student accommodation and not enough building higher apartment blocks with green areas incorporated into them where, you know, we can actually rear children and they'll be safe and they'll have green spaces around them? Do you know what I mean? As opposed to student accommodation.
Yeah, I would love to see a more holistic approach, because any large development in the last kind of 10 years has been student accommodation. To the right of the Counting House is all student accommodation. Where the Lee Boot Place is student accommodation. And I'm not opposed to it in principle. What I want to see and what's missing from the Cork City Development Plan is an active ground floor strategy. So if you put a large block of student accommodation there and the ground floor is just like a reception and a common room, it's very hard for the city to grow outwards. So if they are putting student accommodation on the old tax office site, the ground floor should be reserved for the public. It could be a cafe, a bar, a shop, a restaurant, but it just helps the city move outwards in that direction.
Oh, no, but I know all of that, but I'm suggesting that we already have enough of that and that we want apartment buildings that are beautiful with green spaces for young couples or individuals to buy themselves or to be able to rent themselves or to rear a family in themselves, to reinvigorate the city as a place to live.
100%. I agree. I mean, that's what I want as well. And the strange thing I thought was very strange is that it's being done under the strategic housing development, the site on Sullivan's Quay. So it's being fast-tracked through the SDR or whatever that thing is. But it's not. I mean, for me, housing is something that somebody buys and then they live in. But student accommodation is something that you stay in for 8 or 9 months and it's very transient. So it's not housing, but it's been built under that fast track housing scheme.
Hmm. If you had just finally let you go then, but if you had one wish that would come through right now, what would it be? Would it be dereliction or the kind of tired and jaded or grubby look of the city, or what would it be?
It would be a commitment to for City Hall to change how cities are funded and how they are structured. Because when we unclog that, it fixes everything. The housing, you know, where can we build housing? Where can we shelter homeless people? Where can we put parks? If we're removing the bottleneck for one thing, we're removing it for everything. And it's the systems that are holding the city back.
Hmm. We're hand-tied by structured budgets, as you know, for specific projects. You see that with all of the cycle lanes. That money, millions and all as it is, can only be spent on cycle lanes. You can't decide, you know, what you use the funding for. Do you get me? It has to. You can't. And as you said in the video, if you do something cheaply, you can't use the balance to put it into a park. It doesn't. It's illogical, but it doesn't work that way, right?
Yeah, exactly. It makes no sense. It drains the productivity and the pride. There's no incentive to do a project for cheap and then invest that money elsewhere, because you're not allowed to invest that money elsewhere. Everything is coded, and it's not like the city doesn't have areas where it could invest money, right? We see those, and it would be great if it had the freedom to manage its own balance sheets.
Good to catch up with you. I'm going to share that as well. I'm quite sure that many people have seen it already, but I'm going to share it on our own platforms, your image of the city as it is now and how it could be. But Kev, thanks so much for taking the call. A lot of food for thought.
Thanks a million, Neil. Thank
Kevin
you.
Collins, text 0868104. 106. Have we shared all of that now? We need to get his video up on Instagram and we need to get it up on X and things like that, so you can have a look at it yourself a little later on this morning perhaps. But do get involved. Text 0868104106. And normally now what would happen right now is that I would have the chief executive on air to talk about my conversation or to respond to Kevin Collins and his observations in another world that possibly would happen, but not in this one anyway, not the world that I live in, unfortunately, because I just get knocked back any time I put in a request. But who knows? Text 0868104106 after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. I'll come back to my conversations with Kev Collins text-wise in a few minutes' time. To be fair, all of his videos are up on his own YouTube channel, so you can search YouTube as well for the Kev Collins video, including the one that I was talking about regarding the city of Cork and Cork City Council on his YouTube channel. It's also Monday Munchies today of a Tuesday, so your opportunity to win lots and lots of cakes from the Old Mill Confectionery. I'll tell you exactly what you'll win a little later on, but for now, text who you are and where you're working to 0868 104 106 and we'll start the first bunch of shout-outs in about a half an hour's time. So who are you, where you're working, who you're working with, and you might win today's Monday Munchies of a Tuesday. Text 0868 104 106. To the phone lines we go. Anne-Marie.
Morning, Neil.
And I appreciate the fact that you've taken a break to speak to me, so thank you for that. Over the weekend, you're very much aware of this because your lovely mother is actually a resident in Blair's Hill Nursing Home in Sundayswell. Am I right?
That's correct. My mother is a resident down there for 12 plus years.
Okay. So we heard the bombshell news at the weekend that it's closing. Talk to me about that.
I actually got a text while I was at work on Thursday from a friend of mine that has an aunt down there asking me if I'd heard anything. Up on Thursday, I'd heard nothing. Went home after work and a letter had came in the post. I'm my mother's next of kin, so it was addressed to me, basically telling me that the nursing home was closing down on the 1st of March.
Right.
That was the first I'd heard of it.
Did it say any more than that as to maybe the reason why?
Neil, to be honest, no. I read the letter and I was like, not sunk in. I mean, my mother had said to me 2 weeks ago that she'd heard it was closing down. She had said it and asked some of the nurses down there and they were like, no, that's only rumours. So obviously, I believed when I was told it was a rumour, that it was a rumour. Even the staff thought it was a rumour. On Saturday, one of the nurses below there rang me when I was at home to ask me if I had found a place for my mother. And I was like, I got the letter on Thursday. At present, my mum is in hospital. She's fighting cancer. So I'm up and down to the hospital. I'm not even tuned in with the nursing home, if I have to be honest. I told them, I said, I didn't get a chance to ring around. So I said, what's the next step? What do you do? And she said, if we don't find somewhere, that the HSC will try find somewhere, but they can't guarantee it's within distance of home.
Paddy O'Brien, who advocates on behalf of the elderly, actually talks about where the residents may end up. And he's saying, and he doesn't want this to happen, they could be going to Mallow, Middleton, Kinsale, Fermoy, or further away.
That's like, Neil, they're one of five siblings. I'm the only one that drives. So there's not a hope in hell. Like, I go 3 to 4 times a week, okay, and my other sister's intimate with me. Like, two of my siblings are living across the water, so there's only 3 of us here. Like, how in the name of God is she going to have a visit? As it is, like, she's very unwell. And even to upstart her and move her somewhere else, it's heartbreaking. And I don't know what we can actually do.
Tell me about what life has been like there for her the past 12 years. I mean, you're in there 4, 5, 6 times a week.
So my mother went in there 12 years ago as a result of finding my brother hanging through suicide. She found him and she went off the rails.
Forgive me for saying that.
No,
that's very, very tragic.
I'd rather let you know the background. So she was put on medication and she went very heavy on the drink. And like, it was kind of the case where we'd find her walking the streets, pushing a buggy, with drinking it. We'd go down home, we'd find empty bottles of vodka. She was just giving up and it was the only option to basically keep her alive, was to put her in somewhere we knew there'd be 24 hours someone watching her. Like, I go down there and like, she has all her sense of mind. She knows everything that's going on. She could probably tell me more that's happening on the outside than I could tell her. I'll go down and she'll say to me, did you hear someone died or did you hear this?
Yeah.
There is people down there that have dementia and Alzheimer's that don't have a clue what's going on and I feel so sorry for them. Like, they're going to be upstarted and moved and they don't know where they're going.
How did you find the care and attention?
Like, it's not a good place. It's not a good place. Like, I see people sitting there that are sitting in nappies half the day. They're calling the nurses. And I understand the nurses are understaffed and they're probably sick to death of being called and they're being ignored. like, my mom can be hard work, I'll be honest with you, because she's very sensitive and she's demanding. But, like, that's her. What about the people that can't complain and can't ask for what they're doing? There's people asleep 24 hours in chairs. Like, I could be down there 4 o'clock and they're asleep. So I could go back down the evening at 7 o'clock and they're asleep in a chair and they haven't been moved all day. Like, it's hard on them people. And some people don't have family, don't have visitors.
Yeah, I'm just, like, I'm just thinking, as you're saying there, with regards to people sitting in nappies. Are you saying, like, on armchairs, is it?
On chairs, there's when you go inside the door, it's like a television area, and there's like armchairs, or there's some of the chairs that will recline back. Some of them are asleep constantly, and some of them are moaning and groaning. Maybe, I don't know if they're in pain or it's just the way they react. Some of them are calling nurses and the nurses never come. There's some days I could ring that nursing home and it could ring out for 20, 25 minutes and I don't get an answer. If my mum doesn't answer her mobile, I'll ring the nursing home.
And have you ever made any kind of complaints or intervention on behalf of those that you see perhaps not again getting the best care and attention?
I didn't, Neil, because I'd be afraid if I draw any attention that it'll fall back on my mum.
There were some HICWA visits that left some non-compliance issues on their file to do with, say, staff not having enough fire safety or safeguarding treatments, you know, inadequate supervision of residents, you know, things like that. Does that make sense to you when you hear things like that?
It does. It does make sense. My mum fell out of the bed a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, the beds aren't high, like, they're not high beds. And they would have only rang me because she complained about her wrist. It wasn't that they rang me straight away and said, oh, you know, your mum has fallen out of bed. When I questioned it, basically, they were like, oh, it's probably down to her medication. Like, everything is down to medication. You know,
is it a case that maybe elderly people perhaps do sleep more? Or
They can, Neil, but, like, how can you see someone asleep from early in the morning? If I go up at 10 o'clock in the morning, they're out of bed at 8 o'clock and someone is asleep in a chair. Like, is that normal for even an elderly person?
Right.
There has to be some stage throughout the day where they're awake.
Yeah, that's
worrying. I don't know. I think some of them are medicated. I mean, that's my own personal opinion and I can be totally wrong, but I think some of them are medicated.
In an article in The Echo from last August that said when the inspectors went there, they found, amongst other things, there was inadequate supervision of residents who smoked. They found one resident's chair had evidence of burn holes, which is a very serious fire hazard. Yeah. And they said there were apparently two options available for the main lunchtime meal, but residents were not aware of the choices for lunch. That's sad, isn't it? That's inadequate.
That's sad. Like my mother smokes, and there is a smoking room within the building. But I mean, it's down the end. It's like you don't have to go outside, so it's basically down the end of the hall into a smoking room. I don't smoke, so if I go down and she's not there, I go down looking for her. The state of that room, like the smell of smoke, and there's bedrooms not far off of it. So it's,
well, if you have a room that's dedicated to where people smoke, it's going to be a smelly room.
Oh, it's stink, and the ashtrays are like overflowing. Obviously, some people that smoke are down there probably all day because they've nothing else to do, if that's being honest. But I mean, I'd be looking going, this place is manky, this place is filthy.
Okay.
And like, I mean, I don't know how much it costs. I know my mum is subsidised by the government, and I know that her pension every week, I pay €150.
Okay. So is that the sum total of her contribution, 150, and the rest then is subsidised by the state? There's no fair deal or anything like that?
She doesn't have any property, so there's no fair deal.
Okay. So there is another aspect from the HICWA report that said some residents were offered social dining in the dining rooms, others were not, and were served on their chairs in the day room. That's quite disrespectful, I think, that somebody would be given, what would that be, a tray on their armchair, perhaps?
Anytime I've went up, my mother has been eaten at her chair where she's sitting out. I've never seen her in the dining room. Now, I wouldn't be there at dinner time, but I would be there evening time when it's supper time or cups of tea.
Would she not prefer, though, to be in a social setting like in the dining room having her meals?
I'd say she would, but I just think it's whatever easier for the staff.
Are they very short-staffed then?
Neil, I could go up in the evening and it could be four or five of them sitting around. We say there's like a room where if you're going up to speak with someone, they call you offside. They're sitting around armchairs there. Like, I don't think they're short-staffed, if I have to be honest. I don't think they're short-staffed, but that's me evening time. Like, and they're changing nurses then and there's another four or five come in. Like, I don't know what way they put them to bed. I know two or three of the women I talk are put to bed through a hoist. But I mean, I've never seen them be moved out or anything. So I don't think they're short-staffed.
I don't know how many staff there are there. I do know that there are 37 residents. Would you say that there could be... Well, to be honest, I know the amount of staff that need updating with regards to training. And that's in and around, let's say, 20 of them need to have their training improved. So there's at least 20, right?
Okay, well, I've said, I've never seen 20, but obviously that's over shifts. That's over, we'd say, day shifts and evening shifts.
It said 23 staff required updated training on fire safety and 20 staff on safeguarding training. Now, safeguarding is very important. So is fire training, don't get me wrong. But safeguarding is a broad brush, isn't it? It's all to do with the welfare of the residents.
But surely, before any of those staff got jobs, that all this was checked to make sure that they're trained.
And what reason's been given? Is it because of the failure issues regarding the HICWA report that I've just outlined, or what?
Because of the failure issues. I mean, before we were told it was being sold and someone else was buying her over as a nursing home, and now it's just because of the failure issues. They're not even saying that, Neil. Like, they're not getting into any explanation with us at all. Like, I rang yesterday because I basically wanted to know what the government substitute was for my mum. Because when I'm ringing other nursing homes, I want to know what the ballpoint figure is. And basically, I was told if I need to know this, I need to have a meeting with Pat, which is one of the directors up there.
Okay. So at this stage, what do you know as to where your mum and the other 36 residents are going to be offered? Is it down to the families to find somewhere?
If we can't find somewhere, then it's up to the HSE. I rang everywhere local and nobody has any beds. I basically told the nursing home, I said, I've tried, I can't find anywhere. Will you let them know that they can look and let them come back to me?
Okay.
But I mean, if they come back, Neil, and say down the back of the country or back of the sticks, we're in a dilemma because, like I said, I'm the only one that drives. My mother is not well. Even, like, she's in and out of hospital constantly. She's in hospital at the moment now. But, like, she's the regional is her hospital or the Mercy. She's doing treatments in the Glandora Suite in the CUH. What's that going to do if we're going to move her up or down the country?
What does she make of what's going on?
I don't think she understands. I said it to her yesterday and she just thinks, I think that, oh, we can take her home or we can bring her somewhere. Ideally, I'd love to. I have 5 children in a 3-bedroom house. There is no
Is she happy where she is?
Some days she'll say, yeah. But I just think that she thinks that they saved her when she was going down a black road where she probably would have been dead.
That intervention was needed and it did make all the difference, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I think she's thankful to him for that. Like,
okay, but if you can't find anywhere and you're calling and they don't have availability, isn't it really inevitable that they will be finding places within HSC facilities far away from Cork?
Most definitely inevitable, most definitely. And that's the part I'm afraid of.
Okay. And Paddy O'Brien says, I sympathise with the residents. It's a big upheaval for them. When a person goes into a nursing home and has to be moved, it upsets them completely. It can take 12 months for them to settle in somewhere new. It's heartbreaking for the residents being moved around after they have built up relationships with everybody where they are. Kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
It does, because like 2 of my mum's neighbours from home are in there. So like she probably feels comfortable because they live a couple of doors away from her originally and they're her neighbours. And she's made friends in there.
So why can't they just fix what's wrong?
I don't know, Neil. I don't know why they can't fix what's wrong. Maybe they were given a couple of opportunities and they didn't do it and maybe this is the final straw.
Okay, will you stay in touch if you hear any updates or indeed if you have any good news with regards to your mum and somewhere for her to live her life?
I will, of course, Neil. I keep in contact
okay,
with you.
Okay, thanks Anne-Marie. Cheers.
Thanks a million.
Anybody else that wants to jump in on this conversation, particularly if you have a loved one or a family member in Blair's Hill Nursing Home in Sunday as well, get in touch. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
All right, joined by Ken O'Flynn, TD. Ken, good morning. Did you hear my conversation just there with the daughter of a resident at Blair's Hill Nursing Home?
I didn't, Neil. I didn't hear the conversation at all. I'm just after coming online. Sorry about that.
Okay. I'll just give you some bullet points on it in a moment. But why has it closed?
Well, you know, we're hearing conflicting stories about the closure, but I believe the closure has a lot to do with a national problem, which is the amount of money that HSE is giving to nursing homes all over the country. It's not sustainable anymore for a number of nursing homes. I think we're going to hear about a lot more nursing home closures in the coming year or so. Minimum wage is a factor. Auto enrolment is a factor as well. The cost of doing business these days, keeping the lights on, heating any building, all of those things have a huge knock-on effect on any business. And when you look at what's being awarded by HSE, in particular to the private nursing homes, which is picking up the slack for an awful lot of these HSE nursing homes, it's totally incorrect the amount of money that's being given per patient in the Fair Deal schemes and all the rest of them. And when you look, I put down a number of questions actually to the Minister, because there seems to be a huge inadequacy when you look at HSE-owned homes. And when you look at privately owned homes that are taking in elderly people and then residents as well. And there's a total difference of what the supplement that comes from a HSE home is almost double the amount of what comes to a private nursing home.
So Anne-Marie's mother pays, and the family, they pay €150 a week. Much of that is out of her mother's pension. So the state then pays the huge chunk of it then. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that's right. But what the state is doing, and they've taken, it's very peculiar actually, and I've been taking some advice on this, because they take it county by county. So the state, if you're in County Dublin or Dublin City, and private nursing home will get a higher amount from the state, as opposed to anywhere in Kerry or Cork or County Clare or Sligo or wherever. So it's very uneven. It's been done through the National Purchase Scheme. They were the body responsible for it. I believe it should be done in-house from the department. There seems to be a knot of errors, inadequacies going right across the nursing home sector. But certainly from the conversations I've been having with people in the nursing home sector from West Cork to Donegal, people are telling me it's not sustainable, and that they foresee an awful lot of smaller nursing homes, which give great service, in fairness. And actually, I prefer the smaller nursing homes than these huge mega nursing homes, who've done great service, but it's just not sustainable as a business model going forward. The days of traditional days of people setting up nursing homes from bungalows and adding on extensions, and traditionally they were the nurse and a guard. And I think I'd be fair in saying that retired that were setting up nursing homes in maybe 7 to 10 bedrooms, those days are well and truly gone, and they're being screwed out of the market.
Is Blair's Hill Nursing Home private?
I believe it is.
Okay, so you're saying that they just can't make it work financially. This has nothing to do with the HICWA report that found issues in there.
Well, look, you see, you'll now come across lots of HICWA reports that are telling you that you're not meeting a standard here and you're not meeting a standard there, because the standards have changed so much. And, trying to make a business sustainable to meet all the HICWA reports, you can be the best in the world at certain things, but yes, because of fire doors, because of different regulations, all that sort of stuff. So that has a knock-on effect as well, and a cost as well associated with it. But what I'm hearing back from people, no, I'm only getting second-hand information from people, that it was no longer sustainable to keep open.
Okay, but there were other issues found in there as well with regards to some of the treatment of the residences, and Anne-Marie gave some examples of that herself. You don't see any of that as being an issue with regards to.
I haven't read any reports, and I haven't seen the reports, nor have I had the first hand experience.
Okay, a lot of people sitting in nappies all day, asleep in armchairs, not being brought into the dining hall, the fire safety and fire drills, and issues regarding people who smoke. You're not aware of any of those.
No, that hasn't been brought to my attention from the inquiries that I made about it. It was a financial decision. Now, I'm sure if there are reports like that and there's staffing issues and not being able to supply as much staff, it's very easy to justify that, saying, oh, we weren't able to provide enough staff, and that's where we fell down in standards and the rest of it.
But does it worry you, the care and attention of our elderly?
Care and attention.
We hear stories like this from within nursing homes, and we only hear them because family members share them on the air, it's quite alarming, actually, that people can, all too often, are left to their own devices all day long.
I think we've seen horror stories. RT have been very good at broadcasting it over the years as well. Your show as well, of bringing these stories to light. And the reality is that we must do better in that industry.
Well, it's not very dignified, though, is it, for people?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's horrible when you hear stories like that, and you think of your own parents or your grandparents, you know, and you know, it's horrible when you think that that could be them.
Why can't we find the money though? They are our elderly generation. They're our senior citizens, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, Neil, that's the million-dollar question, or the multi-million-dollar question, as they say. Why can't we find the money? We're being told day and night that we're awash with money, that we're one of the wealthiest, the second wealthiest country in Europe, that we have money for this, we have money for that. We're boasting about our GDP. We're boasting about this, we're boasting about that. But I don't think we feel like a rich country, and in particular when it comes to our health services, whether it's for elderly care or for infant care. I certainly don't feel that we're a wealthy country. We wouldn't be putting people on the bus to Northern Ireland every week, myself and Michael Collins, going up and getting cataract operations if we had an adequate, well-designed and well-put-together HSE or health service system here. I think a lot of the things that I've uncovered in the last 12 months is that there seems to be no standards and no procedures and no accountability in the HSE or in the Department of Health itself, and no records have been kept. And you can have a set of standards and procedures here in University Hospital Cork, which will be totally different to the set of standards in Limerick Hospital.
I understand that. And you've said that, but again, I'm back to our senior citizens who should get the gold star treatment later in life, right? No, I mean, it's interesting because money can be found then. I don't know if you're aware of, up until December of last year, we were spending 3.3 million euro a day on asylum seekers and international applications. 3.3 million a day. Last year alone, we spent 1.2 billion on asylum seekers, international protection order applications, the vast majority of which will be refused.
Correct. And as
but that's as alarming.
As you may or may not be aware, Neil, these are the questions that I raised with Minister O'Callaghan. This would never have come to light if I didn't ask those questions, that we have 312 international protection accommodation services now in IPAS centres around the country. We don't know how many of those people are there without passports. I'll tell you what, Neil, what's very concerning is there's people arriving into this country, and I've said it on your show, and I've said it on National Airways, and I've said it inside in Leinster House. There's people arriving with no passports, with no ID, with no, we don't know who they are, what they are, where they've come from, or how they've come into this country, really, because they're arriving on Ryanair flights and there's no passport or no information.
We know that.
They don't have to give their information, and then they're being passed to another table where there's a medical card being handed to them. Now, I don't know what name goes on the medical card, because if you're saying, I don't have to give you my name and address or my name, how do you put a name on a medical card? But yet there's a medical card issued.
Does every international protection applicant get a medical card?
When people come in look for refugee status, yes. Coming in, declaring themselves a refugee, they're taken over to City West, generally bussed up to City West, and processed there, and you go from one table to the other, and you get your facts, your figures, you have your international translator, you have every Rolls-Royce service rolled out for you.
But this is insane.
You're treated like royalty. And I've been highlighting this over and over again. People will shout over inside in the dial that I'm a racist for saying it, but I'm only telling the truth. This is what's happening. And the other thing that Linda De Courcy, our councillor in Dublin, found out the other day and made me aware of it, and certainly made the internet aware of it, there's people that are have behaved in a manner that is unacceptable, in particular in City West, and it's a three strikes and you're out situation. So we then have people thrown out of City West and out onto the streets. And we have no record of them, where they are, how they are, what they're doing, and where they're doing, what not they're doing. But these people are unsavoury, and people that have caused fights, damaged property, are dangerous to themselves or have mental health issues, and they're thrown out of the IPAS centre.
But the refusal rate, is over 80% who are rejected. Now, they do appeal, and perhaps that figure comes down, which means that 8 out of 10... have their applications to stay refused. But still Correct. We have this cost.
And then they're told to leave the country, and only 50%, on an average, about 50% actually leave the country.
But why am That's I talking with families this morning who have to find somewhere new, another nursing home? It could be Mallow, Fermoy, it could be Clonakilty, it could be a different county for their loved ones, because there isn't enough money.
Neil, I'll be very straight with you. This government and the current administration is very kind to other people, but not so kind to its own. And that's the one thing that has become very, very clear in the 3,000 questions that I've put down last year in Dáil Éireann. It's become very, very clear that the only people that are being discriminated against, and I really, truly believe this, are the Irish themselves at this stage. We're great, and, you know, it's all great for fellas to come on your show and say, have you any humanity at all? Well, humanity needs to start at home. We were talking.
Fella hasn't been on the air since that day, incidentally, in spite of numerous requests to talk.
He's afraid of you.
I doubt that, but I would love a catch-up with the Taoiseach at some stage.
He's afraid to answer the hard and difficult questions, and it's all very well to say, have you any humanity at all, and all this old rubbish. But the reality of life is bloody hard in this country at the moment. We're all feeling it when we're going into Tesco's or Dunn's or Lidl or wherever. We're all feeling it in the shopping bag. We're all feeling it when our own elderly people, when you can't get the care that you need. I met a woman last night up in the Pearshicks hurling a football club, and she told me she's 10 years waiting for a hip operation. 10 years on a waiting list for a hip operation in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking.
And you're talking, what you've brought up there, the example that you've brought up with the nursing home, is just one example of where we're falling down. There are so many services in this country that we're falling down in. And you know what? When we talk about, we have billions of euros in this, well, where's our Cork to Limerick road? Where's our Northern Distributor road? Where's our Mallow Distributor road? For God's sake, charity begins at home. And it's about time that other politicians in this country woke up and realised we're a soft touch. You can't fly into Ireland from God knows where, from Timbuktu and all these places that they're coming from. If you're fleeing war, there's a good chance you don't have a passport with you. Well, Neil, the most people that are fleeing war and coming to enter into Europe by boat are coming into Spain, Italy and Greece. Then there's other people that are travelling across the world and have had 2 or 3 years in France or 2 or 3 years in Denmark or 2 or 3 years in Sweden. And of course, the big call came out, Ireland is open and you'll get a better deal in Ireland.
Are you referencing Rodrigo Gorman's tweet then, is it?
Absolutely, in several different languages. And one of the biggest contributors now and how people are entering this country is crossing the border from Northern Ireland into the Republic of Ireland. And mark my words on this. If something goes wrong in the UK, and things are going seriously wrong in the UK financially, and there's a serious downturn in the UK, Ireland will be flooded and we will be destroyed financially. We will be flooded. Not to mention all the other things that happen in this country and all the other associated crimes that we can see documented in Finland, Sweden, Denmark, into France. They document all the crimes that come in from foreign nationals.
Yeah, I mean, there are some vague stats available. By and large, it's the most criminality engaged in this country has to do with Irish people born and reared here. But by virtue of their percentage of the...
We're currently the majority in Ireland currently.
Are you saying that a time will come when we won't be the majority?
Well, you know what, I walk parts of this city and I walk parts of Dublin, and you know, there's times where you kind of say, what country am I in at all? And that's being truthful with you.
Is that a bad thing? I mean, I also observe lots and lots and lots of different languages, but they're primarily young people who are working for a living.
Can I say one thing to you now, Neil, right? And let's call a spade a spade. There's no Cork person or no Irish person outside Apple Computers where 95 languages are spoken outside the door, inside those buildings, right? There's nobody protesting saying foreigners go home. And look, you know my own situation, who I married to, right?
That's right.
And there's nobody saying foreigners go home. There's nobody outside the regional hospital, or I still call it the regional, that'll tell you how old I am. But there's nobody outside the university hospital saying doctors and nurses go home. But, you know, this excuse that I'm hearing from the liberals and the social groups and all that are saying, oh, it is all doctors and nurses are coming into this country and engineers and all that. Well, I don't think there's many doctors and nurses, engineers that are up in City West. In fact, actually, I put down a question and I asked the minister, have you actually polled all these people in IPAS centres, and have you asked them what their qualifications are, whether they're second level, third level, primary education? Are these people we can put to work immediately and give them a work visa that will help the state?
And
Nothing was carried out. No such questions were answered.
It's an astonishing.
I got the reply back. It wouldn't be appropriate to ask.
Why not?
Are you fit for work? But why wouldn't it be appropriate to work?
I mean, they are guests of the nation.
If you can't ask them, where are you after coming from?
But we know where the vast majority come from: Somalia, Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan.
Correct. And they're a very, very different, but there's a reason why people live in different parts of the world. They're a very different culture to us. And there's very different rules and regulations. There's very different respect, in particular towards women and young women in particular. There's very different levels of respect and things that are taught. And you know what? When we say these people are vetted when they come into the country, now, to get your Garda vetting, if you want to work actually in the Oireachtas as a secretary or a parliamentary assistant, you have to get Garda vetting, my staff of Garda vetting, okay? It took about 6 to 8 weeks for those Garda vetting to come through. So are you telling me people are entering this country and they're being vetted properly? Plus, you pick up the phone, you ring Pakistan. You know what? It's legal to beat your wife in Pakistan.
Well, everybody has their own story to tell in life from wherever they come. They are entitled to, well, they shouldn't be coming here without a passport. I understand all of that. And I understand all of that, but 1.2 billion, even in spite of the fact that the new asylum applications reduced by nearly 30% in 2025. So there's 30% less coming in. And we're spending 651 million more to 1.2 billion for last year alone.
Correct. And the estimate in total between IPAS, other refugee centres and all these other services, that we're going to spend about 4 billion euros. We spend 3.2 million a day, as you said, and 1.2 billion on IPAS centres. But we estimate that it's about 4 billion euros are going to be spent from Ukrainians, housing Ukrainian refugees, all the way over to asylum seekers.
In 2026?
In 2026. That's what we're looking at.
That's a bizarre...
That's what we're looking at. 4 billion euros. Now, I don't know how that is sustainable, but I'll tell you what, you would pay for a lot of stair lifts, you pay for a lot of loo windows, you pay for a lot of footpaths, you would get a lot of potholes filled for 4 billion quid. You would have an awful lot done for 4 billion quid.
Yes, and at the moment we have 37 families having to be told that you need to find somewhere for your own parent.
Yeah. Okay. But as you know, Neil, I suppose they'd go off and they'd buy another big shed with it, you know, and that's what you're up against.
Okay.
That's what you're up against.
Okay.
And it's deeply frustrating.
Okay. Thanks for that, as always. Ken O'Flynn, the Independent Ireland Party, text 0868 104 106. So they have for some things and then they do not for others. But in this case, it happens to be, elderly parents of loved ones on Leaside being told, sorry, you need to find somewhere new yourself. And if you can't, we'll do our best to relocate your parent, but it could well be a fair distance from where they are now. Your thoughts are welcome. I'll come back to calls after the break. Text 0868 104 106.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
What's your experience of Cork nursing homes? Text 0868 104 106. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Thanks for holding. Both of your parents, your mam and dad, are in Blair's Hill Nursing Home.
They were in Blair's Hill. Mom went in there when mom passed away in June 24.
Sorry to hear that.
She was in there 10 years at the time. She had dementia. It was quite bad. So about just before lockdown, just during lockdown, Dad couldn't get in to see her, so Dad signed himself into the nursing home.
Did he?
He did, and isn't he passed
that,
away.
Isn't that the most beautiful thing?
It was beautiful. And we were always wondering, why did he do it? Because they used to kill each other, as they do.
Love turned upside down is love all the same, though.
Oh, he loved the bones of her. He went in to look after her. Now, his own health deteriorated. And while they were there, they did get good care. When Dad passed away, which would have been in July 22, the place just went downhill completely.
Okay.
Now, before I say any more, my heart genuinely goes out to the families out there that are looking for care homes at the moment, because we would still know a lot of them. We made some very good friends up there, and I really, my heart goes out to them looking for somewhere. But our experience, myself and my sister Maria, our experience wasn't very good from there on in. We complained numerous times to HICRA, and while they did report and investigate, we felt there was a lot more could have been done. One of the examples was, as I was telling your colleague on the phone, about 3 weeks before Mum passed away. Now, she was under 2 stone when she passed away. She was on morphine. We asked for morphine one day because she was in a lot of pain, and we were told it would be there whenever she needed it. And we were
She didn't have a pump, no?
No, she didn't have a pump. The patches in the end, and it was kind of a form of a pump towards the end, which they only gave her in 24, 48 hours before she passed. We fought for the pump, and they wouldn't give it to her. She had cancer as well, but it wasn't diagnosed because before Dad passed away, they wanted to open her up to diagnose her. And he said, he put his foot down, he said she had been chewing off and just make her comfortable.
Now bear in mind, your mum passed away at 90 and your dad passed away at 86. He died before your mum.
He died before her.
Yeah.
He knew, my dad knew, like he was always the type of man, once we were looked after and my mum was looked after, he was happy. I think he could see what was ahead for mum, and he knew myself and my sister Marie would look after her. He didn't want, not that he didn't want to be wronged for that, he didn't want to see her go through it. And she went through 2 years of living hell.
How?
That's the only way I could describe it, the way she was treated. She was treated very badly. We, as I say, when we asked for the morphine, we were offered paracetamol. Now, paracetamol wouldn't get rid of a headache.
Nice.
On numerous times we went up, she might have had a plaster stuck to her hair. Her clothes and her nappies would have been left on the floor in the bathroom. Just general stuff like that. But one story in particular, my sister went up one day and her clothes were damp. So we were saying maybe she had an accident because she was in nappies, obviously. No, what had happened is they had given her a bed bath and an emergency came in. So they left her and forgot to come back to her. She was lying in the bed for 4 hours solid with damp clothes in her.
Forgot
so
about
we... Yeah, we questioned it, obviously, and they said, oh, we'll change her straight away. We stood outside the door of her room until she was changed and we went in.
But you were lucky you turned up. She could have got pneumonia or anything.
She very easily, and it would have killed her. We went in when they changed her, or supposedly changed her, and we pulled back the blanket. Now, she had a lovely cardigan on, she had her beads on. We pulled back the blanket and she had nothing on her from the waist down. They left her with no clothes on from the waist down. Because there was some other emergency came up.
Okay, if they're constantly putting fires out, are they grossly understaffed? Are they just stretched?
I do think they are understaffed, and also the staff that are being brought in aren't being properly trained. As I said, there's some fantastic nurses up there. Absolutely fantastic. One sticks out from my mind, Tina. She was fantastic. A lot of them up there, like there's another guy, we used to call him the gentle giant, Dino was his name. He was fantastic with mum and dad. A lot of them coming in are just, I don't know, are they not fully trained? Like, we had to fight for dad to be put in the room near the nurse's station when he was dying. He died within 6 weeks. He had kidney failure. But as I said, up to then, they were run very well. They were quite good, but after that, my God, some of the stories. I could spend all day on the phone telling you some of the horror stories that Mum went through. Nobody, and I mean nobody, no matter who they are, should have to go through that in their later lives. As people shouldn't have to go through looking for another new nursing home now. But
did she comment about the treatment? How she was, what life was like
she
there?
She was not. She didn't know where she was.
Okay.
Do you know what? A funny thing is, at the time when she went in, she used to think she was in the Hilltop Hotel in Yall. And she was quite happy there. Do you know? But it's just the treatment she got in the last 2 years.
Okay.
Moreover,
so there were failures in HICWA reports over the last couple of years with regards to different
100%,
aspects.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. We know of that. There was also... somebody was observing, and I'm wondering, is this commonplace that you would have residents of nursing homes all day long on their own, just literally in an armchair, asleep or drowsy, or you know, not getting proper care attention at mealtime and things like that?
100%. I know what Mum, before she was bedbound in the nursing home, which was only in the last couple of months, and we requested that ourselves because they used to have Mum out in the day room. And Mum had growth on her face, cancer growth on her face, which took over half her face. It wasn't very nice for anybody that came in with kids to see it. She was kind of, it was like, how could I put it? She was kind of put in a corner and it was like, you're easier there. We can look after you where we can see you.
Yeah.
So we requested that she be kept in her room and they said, really? And we said, yes, because it wasn't fair on other people coming in to have to see it, and she was uncomfortable. So we got her into the room, and what, you know, it's just all these small things down to the cleanliness of the room, her clothes being left around. My daughter, who's 25, went up to her one day and had to peel plasters out of her hair.
Were you ever there at meal times, for instance?
We were. There's myself and my sister. We used to go up every, we used to take our turns, go up every second day. So because we had promised Dad when Dad went, that was his dying wish, look after your mom, and we did. There was somebody with her every day.
Yeah.
There was another, just another story where the week mom was dying, we requested a priest because mom was very religious and we wanted her to have the last rites.
Yes.
And we went into the office and they told us they didn't have the number of a priest. No, this is a care home. A priest is, you know, genuinely up there maybe every second day. On this occasion, they eventually found a number and they said they couldn't contact the priest. So we said, right, we'll do it ourselves because we wanted mom to have the last rites. So,
and was it time for the last rites?
It was. Okay. It was 100%. A very good cousin of ours, Joe Colin of Colin's funeral home on Shandon Street, actually contacted the priest for us on our behalf. And the priest he contacted was the priest they said they couldn't contact.
And were you actually told that we don't have a number for a priest?
Oh yes, my sister. If my sister would come on air, she would tell you. She went up to the office and they were told we don't have the number of the priest. I don't know, was it miscommunication or was it just who was ever on that day didn't know where the number was? But it was left to us to go away and organise the priest for my mom to have her last rites.
It's not very dignified, is it?
No, she had no dignity in the end. It was, like as I say, she was under 2 stone. And it was just like, my personal opinion, and as I say, my heart goes out to anyone, this nursing home should have been closed down a long, long time ago.
Well, I'm not so sure
about
that, but certainly fixed and improved and made better, because we don't want to be losing nursing homes. Like 37 residents now have nowhere to go.
100%. And I really do hope they'll look after whether it be somebody take over the nursing home and keep them where they are, or whether something should be done to have them prioritised into nursing homes. Because, as you know, a dementia patient, to change their routine from A to B, it's a major, major upheaval. And they shouldn't have to go through that at this stage of their life. You know?
Yeah. I think I think we could do an awful lot better for those that need the most help, particularly as they get older. You know,
it's 100%.
It's just appalling treatment in a country that supposedly has so much money to spend on different things. But there you go. I think it's a beautiful thing, though. Isn't that the most wonderful thing that John? Isn't that the most wonderful thing that John moved in with Kathleen so you could be nearer in the nursing home? Isn't
it beautiful? But it meant that we were left without him. And then he went downhill and passed away. So it's heartbreaking, but it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But we're very proud of what he did for her in the end.
It's a beautiful love story. It really is.
It is. And there's not many of them around.
Thanks, Cathy. So thanks so much.
That's just my story anyway.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay,
thanks
thank
for listening.
You.
Thank
Bye.
You. Text 0868104106 back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Your chance, of course, to win the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday because of the bank holiday yesterday. Courtesy of ourselves and the Old Mill Confectionery. Lots of wonderful, wonderful fresh cakes for all sorts of occasions, birthdays, anniversaries, just celebrations, or just because you love cakes. You can buy them directly at the shop at the North Point Business Park. And they are now stocking the Old Mill Confectioneries at many, many shops across the city and county. And we have for you the big chocolatey fudge cake, the long jam donuts, the light and creamy eclairs. We've got lots of chocolate slices, custard slices, tipsy cake, and of course, get the kettle on for the Chester cake. It'll feed 15 or so of you. So text who you are and where you're working to 0868104106 as we say good morning to everybody at Cocoon Childcare. Love the Munchies. Timmy Meldrum and everybody at the Complete Upholstery Centre in Barrack Street, always listening. The Cork Flower Studios in Douglas Street. To everybody at Barogue Healthcare on the Monaghan Road, good morning. The Cork Clinic, all of the gang there. To everybody at 360 Security Solutions in Ballincollig. To Microbio in Fermoy, Barry Joyce's Coal, up at the top of a wet, fair hill. The boss has a sweet tooth and loves the old mill cakes. Well, there you go. The Orchid Centre at the CUH, one in a million. Euro Car Parts at Sarsfield Road in Wilton are listening. Bandon Primary School, morning to Orla and all of the staff. Cereo Homes in Maryborough Hill. Agnes O'Brien and all of the staff at Smurf at Westrock Solutions. Julie's Little Doggy Daycare out in the business park in Churchfield. And they'd share it with the doggy parents. None for the cakes, I suppose. Cakes are supposed to be bad for the dogs. Tell any dog that I ever had in my life who ate many, many cakes, it never took a tap out of him. Oh, I'd probably be slaughtered for saying that. Albert Quinlan's in Dennehy's Cross. The lads were talking about Chester cake earlier. They still haven't tried it. I haven't tried it, I mean, but I'd like to treat them to perhaps some cakes and maybe for the first time tasting a Chester cake this lunchtime. So Albert Quinlan's in Dennehy's Cross. So we'll do another bunch of shout-outs. Text who you are and where you're working to 0868 104 106 and we'll do another bunch of shout-outs for the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday in about a half an hour's time. My conversation with Kevin earlier on regarding his thoughts on City Council, the Cork City Council itself, or indeed the executive that runs the city, right up to perhaps the chief executive and the state of our city in general. Those issues are not exclusive to Cork City Council. It's statewide. Procurement rules slow everything to a snail's pace and could cost lives when you consider if it applies to life-saving equipment and critical communications infrastructure. I know about this, but I can't talk on air with regards to the slowness of procurement rules. I'm currently still in the civil service, but I'm leaving in a few weeks. Well, you might be freer to talk at that point. This man, has he ever been, talking about lack of culture, has he ever been to the Everyman, the Opera House, or any of the bars that provide music and comedy like Collins, the Elizabeth Fourth, the Glucksman offers superb historical tours and exhibitions, the School of Music, City Hall, recitals and concert? Yes, the city really needs cleaning up and painting, but our city does have a lot to offer, says Nathan. You're on about the state of the city. I'm out here on Skahard Road and the gullies are full of leaves, broken glass and grass growing. They haven't been cleaned in years. Any significant rain and the place is flooded. When there's a weather warning, council should be out straight away cleaning the drains. They should have regular attention during the autumn. It's not rocket science. Morning, I stayed overnight in Waterford this weekend gone, and I have to say it really opened my eyes as to how abysmal Cork City Centre really is. It was largely pedestrianised. They take great pride in maintaining and promoting this history of Waterford City. There's a huge roofed area where there's a lot of outdoor seating available all year round. Put it simply, it was very people-friendly, Waterford City. City Hall did not get the Marina Park right, as you suggested. A big public park of its size and no public toilets. That is not well done. Also, some of the planting leaves a lot to be desired. On the lack of checkpoints then from earlier on this morning, there was a drop in Garda checkpoints for drink driving checkpoints and drug driving. Was there supposed to be Garda on checkpoints over the weekend? If there was, I saw none travelling from Yall. Also, can I ask, what's the craving with coffee? Cars queuing everywhere for takeaway coffee. I don't drink coffee, so I'm just very curious. On the 3 million a day spent on refugees, yet Micheál Martin needs a magic wand to help flood victims in his own country. He's being paid to lead, for God's sake, roll on the next election. Do the TDs pay for the food and drink in the Dáil restaurant out of their own pockets? Or are we, the taxpayers, paying for it? Well, I suppose technically they pay for it out of their own pocket and then they claim it back in expenses. Do you get me? So ultimately, you're paying for it. You talked about the cost of a burger and chips being maybe 18.50. It's 25 euro, man, all day long. Well, I bet you there want to be some. It would want to be some incredible burger for 25 euro with all of the trimmings. Chippy, marry me, Chippy. You said, well, he's before the courts now. There was 6.5 grand's worth of damage done and he arrived in court with 1,000 euro and he said he will save more from his social welfare to pay back for the damage. He saved the money, you said, from his social welfare. Why is he not working? And he laughed at you on air when you asked him if he would clean the roof. Mind you, you did say to him when you spoke to him on air that you look forward to seeing more of his stuff around the city. Desi, did I say that? I mean, I'm assuming that I did, but I can't stand over it if I did say it because it's graffiti and it's not in any way, shape or form attractive. as graffiti goes, or tagging. So if I did, I was wrong. I shouldn't have, because I'm not looking forward to any more of the graffiti where people are just tagging our beautiful buildings. Anyway, Desi says, €1,000 is not much when you add up the damages graffiti has actually done around the city. I love street art, but that's just vandalism. Thanks for that one. And then maybe Mr. Dyson, who's just put in a helipad down in Ballinatray, should give refunds for his overpriced devices that he sold, which become dysfunctional and do not work properly, but only for a short period of time. I've had two of the Dyson vacuums and I have two of the Dyson hands-free animal type things over the year. And I, what I found was they're brilliant at the beginning, but they tend to get blocked, or there's suction issues, or bits fall off it, or whatever the case may be. Maybe I'm just too rough with them. I don't know. And then with regards to one or two others from this morning's show, back to the state of the city, I say not one of our councils, our councillors, has any experience or background in what they do when it comes to construction, renovation, restoration, traffic measures or roads. Kevin is actually the knight in shining armour as a spokesperson for Cork, says David. In a world where City Hall is powerless to outdated bureaucracy, that he is a knight in shining armour. I think there is an awful lot of outdated bureaucracy, and I think in the defence they're probably caught up in an awful lot of paperwork that comes with the job. Can you find out, please, who owns the Grand Parade Hotel that's been idle for over 30 years? Isn't this a typical example of dereliction? Is it council-owned or is it privately owned? Well, I actually don't know. I mean, I recall back in the early noughties, there was talk of something being done with the hotel, but nothing has. I think at one stage it was being developed or was going to be developed by a company called Franilla. Other than that, I don't know what has happened since. It just sits there for like, what, 20 years? Nothing happening? Maybe somebody can shine some light on it. The Grand Parade Hotel site, which is derelict now and has a big kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, almost like kind of drop-down advertising for Cork City Council, covering the entire front of it. Anyway, text 0868104106.
Listen to the Neil Prendeville Show wherever you go. Download the Go Loud app, the new home of Red FM.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Trees are down, going up Silver Springs. Bear that in mind. We've had a lot of difficult weather now at the moment with regards to wind and rain, and it's leading to trees down. So proceed with caution. Back to the phone as we go. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Thanks for taking the call. You wanted to pick up on a point, and I just need to be clear on this as to exactly what did Ken O'Flynn say?
Well, in Ken, I listened to Ken. I heard 80% of it, but at the end, he made what he presumes a throwaway comment that, by the way, Neil, it's legal to beat your wife in Pakistan.
Just so I'm absolutely sure, did he say legal or easier?
Legal.
Oh, forgive me. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
Now, I got married in Pakistan. First of all, it's not legal. I got married there in 1994. I had a child born there in 1995. I'm back in Cork now. And on behalf of all the Pakistani community here, now, I'm Irish myself. I think it's a complete throwaway comment, and Ken is well able to. No, I didn't. He want to fact check what he says before he says it, because it's completely wrong, and I'd like him to withdraw it or apologise for it.
Okay. So you would like him to apologise for that remark?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. So can we put a call in to Ken O'Flynn to see if that can happen for you?
No problem whatsoever.
What I recall was the point that was trying to be made was that there is a proportion or a section, say, for instance, of people who come into this
country right, and yes,
under international protection orders. Let me try and put this as fairly as I can, that perhaps would be coming from some countries where they may well treat women differently to how we do here with regards to respect.
But regardless of what concept, he actually, you were discussing something else, and he half interrupted you and he said, by the way, Neil, it's legal to beat your wife in Pakistan.
Okay, okay.
And then he continued on about they're going to 4 billion rather than 3 billion. Now, I'm not saying whether I agree with him or disagree with him in what he was saying, but I'd like him to withdraw that particular statement or okay. apologise for okay. it.
Because it is a fact.
It's a fact it's not.
Yes.
I've lived there. I got on very well there. I have a ex-wife now, which I get on great with.
Yes.
That's, and a son. They're contributing very well to Ireland and to Cork, both of them. And it's hard enough, as they say, I'm only speaking personally.
Yes,
myself.
I understand. And you're right.
For my wife and son, without Ken, with a huge listenership, making a comment like that.
Okay, okay. It's very fair to say that the law changed and became much, much stronger in that regard under Pakistani legislation.
Well, I think what it was, it might be legal in Sharia law. It may have been in the past.
Okay.
Which is not Pakistani law.
No, there would be two different. There were issues at some stage with regards to religious teaching the Pakistani legal system said domestic violence of any form is a criminal offence. Now, would it be fair to say older traditions or views did talk about disciplining a spouse, but modern law makes that a crime?
And on law, as it stands today, at 10:45, when the comment was made, was wrong.
Yeah. You are right.
I'm sorry. It's pretty black and white. As I say, the bigger issue with immigrants and all that, I don't have an opinion. Well, I do have an opinion on that, but that's not for me right now. But as I say, it's just, I'm here. At the time, as I say, I lived there for 3.5 years. And I must say it was 3.5 of the best years of my life.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's say 3 years when I got used to it. And I just felt it was a throwaway comment that, as I say, really, really upset me. And I think it would have upset a lot of other people that may not wish to ring about it or anything like that. But I certainly took it.
Well, you're dead right to pick up the phone because it's not lawful. It's not lawful. It's against the law. I'm waiting to see what he has to say on the matter, actually. But there may well have been outdated cultural practices or misrepresentation of religious texts.
Exactly, it may have been religious texts. But I mean, in older Ireland, as you know yourself, you many spoke of, it was okay to slap a child at school and all that kind of stuff. So the law is updating all the time and everywhere. And I think as a public representative, you should, before you make comments on air, you should research them.
Okay, good point. Well made. I'm glad you picked up the phone. You're well and truly entitled. He's not available for comment right now, but that's only right now. And we'll have to see. They're just telling me now whether he'll be in a position to come back and clarify or, as you say, withdraw his remark as soon as possible. I'll stay on this and see if I can make that happen for you, all right?
No problem at all.
Thanks, Frank. Take care.
Cheers.
Text 0868-104-106. Your thoughts on nursing homes are very important because there is so much money washing around in this country. You would think that we would be opening more and more to look after senior citizens in their time of need. When they need care and they need a residential setting that comes with all of the trimmings and it's the Gold Star service. We can find money for lots of other things. But I got a very worrying email in, and your thoughts on this are welcome, incidentally. Came in over the weekend. Somebody whose details I won't give out said to me, I would really appreciate if you read my emails so I can get your listeners' opinion and advice on this matter. We as a family are facing a challenging issue. My dad has dementia and is refusing to go into a nursing home. Now, this is relevant considering what we've been talking about this morning regarding our nursing homes. So our dad has dementia and is refusing to go into a nursing home. He also refuses to take any of his medication. He's a diabetic. He suffered 2 strokes in recent times. I can understand his confusion, his fear, and his emotional attachment to familiar surroundings, but he does not recognize the amount of care that he requires. This is putting significant stress on our family because he is now a danger to himself. Myself and my siblings have young children, work full time, but even if we didn't, we still can't give our dad the care he needs. He receives home help, but refuses to let them aid him regarding his personal hygiene. Because of this, he can go for weeks with no shower. He refuses also to shower for us. We had to disconnect the cooker as he almost burned the house down. I believe in recent times the law has been changed that if a person says, I don't want to go into a home, then their voice is heard and they don't have to go. Surely there is a way to deal with this when the person is in danger. He's been in hospital a number of times, but they keep letting him come home as he has a family and a home of his own. Are we to pretend he is now on his own without a family to get help so he can get the care that he needs? Or will they still release him if he says he wants to go home? This is very upsetting for us. I'd appreciate you keeping my identity private. Has anybody been through this scenario where a loved one is just refusing the care that they need at a particular stage of their life? Text 0868104106. Dad has dementia, refusing to go into a nursing home, won't take medication, he refuses to wash, won't engage with the home help, does not, full stop, want to leave. And I suppose because he has attached emotionally to the familiar surroundings of his own home, and he doesn't, and perhaps with dementia, he's not cognitively aware of the situation he's in or the help that he needs at this stage in his life. It's very, very difficult. I'm not sure how to, I could talk personally, with end of life care for a loved one, of course, and it's not always rational on their behalf, but they've got so much going on with regards to their health. And even if you have, say, for instance, physical issues and you're physically unwell, or you're not eating, or you're not taking in, hydration or food for fuel, it impacts on your thinking process anyway, and it leads to confusion and irrational thoughts. And unfortunately, you're not making the right decision for yourself, although loved ones want to make the best decision for you. But that's very difficult, because you can't force somebody at the same time. You literally can't pick somebody up and bring them to a nursing home against their wishes. And I'm assuming you've had all of the conversations, nice, calm conversations with your dad as to trying to explain it as to how it would be better now at this stage that he would decide to, and accentuate the positives of maybe residential settings or the like-minded people of the same kind of age, and perhaps, where a lot of friendships could be made. But perhaps somebody's been through this. Text 0868 104 106. Do share. Advice needed on that one, please. Have you been through it? How did you navigate? I'm a carer for my brother who has mental health issues and my dad who has heart trouble. I had to leave a full-time job earning €800 a week and now get a carer's payment of under €400 a week. I suppose you can throw in the GP visit card, but that's it. I find it difficult not to return to full-time work, but there's nobody to step in and do what I need to do for my brother and father, so there isn't any alternative. I can't go back to work. I don't understand how they can help calculate these rates that they pay, but I'd imagine if I stepped away and went back to full-time work, then it would cost a whole lot more to provide for my brother and my father if the state had to pick up the expense. I'm just putting it out there to get a feel for what other people think. And no, I am not screwing the system. Both require care and attention and full-time supervision. And that's down to me, says Jason, by text to 0868104106. Your thoughts are welcome on that one also, if you're a carer. But I'd love to get your thoughts on your own experiences in nursing care settings and residential care settings. Perhaps you've experienced with regards to having a loved one in residential care. Text 0868104106.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Pick up the phone, 0818104106. You can also send a voice note if you can't jump on air. It's the same text line, 0868104106, but on WhatsApp. I came across a very moving and touching story in All About Cork over the weekend. And we've spoken in the past with the singer, Karen Underwood, about her career and indeed her own life story, originally coming over from Chicago with her husband and children in 1997, and then embracing herself in the Cork way of life and rearing a family, but losing her little son, Irby, in 2012 to, unfortunately, suicide. But It was a very moving article, actually, and I wanted to chat with Karen about it because in an effort to try and raise support and money for Pieta, she's running 56 miles in February. It's a challenge she set herself in honour of her late son. Karen, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Hello to all of you and your family.
I remember, I have to put it out there. I knew little Irby because he would call to Luke when there were two small little boys, and I'd open the front door, and there was this little two foot fella there saying, "Is Luke coming out?" Never forget it. He was a wonderful
foot brown with a full Cork accent.
That's it. Yeah, 2 foot of brown with a Cork accent. He was a wonderful, wonderful lad. But how have you been coping with what you put across in All About Cork as all-consuming grief that kind of sits on your shoulder?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. I suppose I am the queen of swans. And what I mean by that is I'm paddling like hell to stay afloat, Neil. And my cup was just running really empty from October onward. And I started just lying about how I really felt. And it is all consuming. It's when you lose a child, it colors your every vision is a different shade. Even though it's still pink, it's just not as pink.
You described it as when you lose someone, when you lose somebody, anybody, but a mm-hmm. son in the circumstances mm-hmm. of poor Irby, mm-hmm. life mm-hmm. shifts. Grief taps you on the shoulder, says, "I'm mm-hmm. here when you get back." That's right.
So, like, I spent a lot of time doing and not trying to feel it and numbing it in ways with food, really having a serious battle with food and a food addiction, but that was my comforter, you know, not really dealing with it, you know, going to therapy, but really not. I'm okay. And before you know it, October of 2025 hits and the Jazz Festival was over and you realize, you know, it's another anniversary coming up, another Christmas that you won't have them. And also haven't had another great loss, I suppose, in 2025, last January, 4 days prior, it was a trigger as well. Mm. So, because, you know, I lost a stepson as well. And it triggered it. And I think, you know, and I said, I just can't do this. This is too much. And I started running, just running, you know, not physically running, but trying to get away, trying to escape it by any means necessary. But the pain and grief just says, okay, when you're done doing all that stuff, girl, I'm here waiting for you.
I am not going anywhere. I'm that monkey on your shoulder that will always remind you.
I'm there. And realizing that was the moment acceptance started, but the pain has been incredibly hard. And,
you know, you talk about that kind of, are you okay, Karen?
I'm great. I'm great as I can be.
You talk about that pain. Is there that unanswerable question as to why?
No, it's just, you know what it is. Luke grew up and has gotten married and has lived his life.
He has.
And Simon has gotten and become a professional rugby player,
yes,
and has lived his life. And Matthew, my friend Claire's son, these are all Beaumont boys, has come up and he's a doctor now, and Irby's best friend is now a writer. And Joe Dowling has restaurants, and my son stopped there. So is it paying? Okay, and it's creeping up on me now, but I'm going to breathe through this because I got this. And you got this with me, Neil. And
yeah,
this is not a sensational story. This is my life we're talking about. But the only way I know to do this is to do this.
But you talk there about many of the young men now who'd be into their late 20s, early 30s, who are...
No, they're 30. Yeah, they're 30 and above.
Yeah.
They're 30 to 34-ish. Killian married, having his first child. These were Irby's.
All friends of Irby's. Yeah.
All from Douglas, from from Beaumont Boys, from Black Rock, and from Douglas, you know, and their lives have continued. So it's always it's a bittersweet wonderful. You would never begrudge a parent to feel, and this is what this is all about. I would never be able to begrudge a parent from that thing I carry. So why not do what I can do about it while I'm on the time side of life? You see, once people make this decision, once young men, young women, mothers, fathers, last week a friend of mine's brother made the decision, once that happens, we can't do a darn thing to help them. And I'm conscious I'm on the radio and I want to swear so bad, but
you're
I
grand. No, you're grand. I mean, you have a lot to carry, and it's a courageous battle that you fight every day, because one would wonder as a parent, why me? Why us? Why should others be so lucky?
Self-pity is a luxury I cannot afford. Self-pity leads to cyclical behavior and getting into food addiction and eating and all of that stuff. So I don't do that anymore.
That became your crutch, did it?
It did, very much so. And I yo-yo dieted for years, and I've done loads of things, and I finally decided, look, this is not working. The food ain't even working no more, you know? So what can I do now? But back to the boys, you know, the boys and the young men and the older men, last week it was a friend's son who is a choir master that I work with. I've done music work with her. Her brother decided to die by suicide, made that choice. So one thing I want to say while I have the time, I'm on a time set of life, stop talking about people committing suicide. It's like using the R word for people who have mental health challenges or developmental challenges. People are not committing a crime. People choose to die by suicide because they don't believe they have another choice. And not you, nor me, nor anybody can stop that, right? I know I don't have the power to stop that, but I do have the power to help people.
I know, but I've spoken with people in the past who went through these devastating circumstances where a loved one did decide that the world was no longer for them. And they felt so much guilt about it, in the sense of, we didn't pick up on the signs, where could we have done more, you know?
Now, that survival guilt is real. Survival guilt is real. And that's a huge part for me, that I have survived my son. You know, I have survived him, and I'm getting to see. I have wonderful moments. Don't get me wrong, Neil. I see beautiful things. I do beautiful things. I love beautiful people, and beautiful people love me back. So I do have great, wonderful, happy moments. But how grief works when you survive it is it taps you on the shoulder. When I'm standing in Lake Lugano last month, I went to a concert, and I was looking at Lake Lugano, and it was magnificently still and beautiful. But a lake has a way of bringing you to a base that the sea doesn't. The sea rushes and it gives you other thoughts, and the sea doesn't do it. But the lake brings me to root. It brings me to roost my emotions and my feelings. And I thought, Irby's not going to see this. And when I was making the dish the other day, I was making oxtails, and Christiana loves oxtails. And I thought, my boy won't get to taste this. Or, you know, there's just so many things in life. And, you know, my brother, he stood at the grave and he spoke about, you know, while we're on the time side of life, I can do nothing about the choices made beyond that. But I certainly can do something about the choices that young people make and adults make. And that's why I still go to schools when I'm invited for free. And I speak to Leaving Cert students. If I'm invited, I'm coming. And I've done it as far as the Midlands. And I've done it off my own back, and I will continue.
Do you tell them, and I'm quoting again from All About Cork, that my Irby was funny, he was outgoing, he was kind, he was loving to all of his friends. He was, but at the same time, what would you say to them then about perhaps, you know, why something like this would happen to a funny, outgoing, kind, loving boy?
I say to them, look next to you, because the person next to you has a capacity to die by suicide. Mm. So don't ignore your own mental health. You know, I had a girl come up to me. I did a TED Talk in UCC. I was in Christ the King. She was being bullied once upon a time. This is going back possibly maybe 8-10 years ago. And now she came and hugged me at that TED Talk, which she helped to organize, and said, you don't remember me, but you spoke to me that day about bullying and about mental health and about your son, and I'm graduating from medical school this year. So don't tell me that talking about it does not change lives. Talking about it absolutely changed lives. Mm. It changes lives.
Mm.
So that's my job. My job is not to feel sorry for myself. My job is to cry when I feel it and to feel it to heal it. And to feel it to heal it, I have to put down substances to be able to feel it. And it hurts like...
No, because you don't have peace, do you?
You do. You get it. You get waves of it. You get waves of peace. But, you know, I no longer look for peace. I look for disturbance. I look for, you know... Why do I feel this disturbance? And I deal with it. And I look at how can I help other people not to feel, other mothers, not to sit in my seat.
How did you cope and come through the eating disorder, curiously?
You don't come through an eating disorder. You live with an eating disorder. Okay. That's first off. You don't come
I just thought you said, I got the impression you said, no, I've had enough of this addiction. I've had enough of this.
I have had enough of the food. Of the food not working for me. I'm eating to mask pain.
Yeah.
You know, I've had enough. So if it's not that, what else is it going to be next? You know, so I have to hit it on the head. And the only way I can do that is to be honest that that's exactly what it is. Like any other addiction, if it's alcohol, if it's drugs, any other addiction, you know, you have to say, look, this is a problem. It's causing me my relationships. It's causing me my family. It's causing me my self-esteem. You know, it's causing me not to be effective in society.
Are you through it now?
So, am I through it? And I'll never be through it, Neil. I'm not in it. For today, I'm not in it. For today.
Yeah.
Just for today.
Yeah.
Just for today. Like any of us, just for one day at a time, you know, just for today. So, but I'm not going to talk about my food addiction. I'm only saying how I was thinking I was coping, Neil, but I really wasn't.
I understand what you're saying. No, you're very honest. You're very open. And,
you know?
And can I ask you, with regards to your beautiful son, Are you religious? Do you think that there will be a reunification in the next world or perhaps heaven for you and Irby?
I'm not religious. I think that, you know, we continue however we continue, and I don't understand that. That's beyond my understanding. And I had to, because I became very angry with God. You know, and a little girl told me, she says, well, it is a personal relationship, isn't it? So you can be angry with God. 10 years old, she was giving me a medal from Father Matthews to say, I'm thinking about you and I want you to have this medal. Mm-hmm. I lost Irby, and she was doing something. But even in her lovingness and her kindness, I have managed not to, you know, focus on whether or not I believe in God or any of that, because religion doesn't matter to me. Because I'm a spiritual person. Spiritual people give. Religious people do things for what they can get. I'm not thinking about eternal life in heaven. I'm thinking about what I can do right here.
Yeah, and I understand that. But for some, religion can be a huge comfort.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And that's wonderful. Whatever works. You know, I say to people, whatever makes your hair fly back. But what makes my hair fly back, the little three strands in a circle that I have, what makes my hair fly back is giving service to others and feeling my own pain and healing my own pain and just doing. Navel gazing doesn't work for me.
Mm.
My navel just gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Mm. You know what I mean?
And we are still losing people, of course,
absolutely,
to suicide.
Absolutely.
And I will
We're losing people. We're losing young men in these single car collisions that we don't know.
Yeah.
We're losing men who, you know, who fall over things. We don't know. Was that a choice or not? But I do know that Theater House works, and I do know that they're doing this wonderful, wonderful fundraiser. If I can drop it right now and just say, it's called Just Giving. If you go to Google search or whatever your search engine is, and you go to Just Giving Theater House, and if you type in my name, Karen Underwood, K-A-R-E-N, Underwood, just like it sounds, and you look me up, there's a little fundraising thing there, and I'm posting regularly on both my Facebook page and my also my Insta pages. And I'm on here talking to somebody that I've known for many, many years. Neil, you are a star, you know, to do this. And a mother would do anything, most mothers, I can't say all, to just have an opportunity for their children to live.
Mm.
You know, I think about that fateful day we had that big fight that day about him not studying and about where was his grades. And, you know, and me for a long time thinking that's why he did it and it was my fault, and kind of getting through that and saying, you know, now none of that matters. That doesn't matter that if he had failed the Leaving Cert or not, if he could just be here in the window of a McDonald's and saying, welcome to McDonald's, can I take your order? And if that's what he was meant to be, he's still here on the time side of life. Maybe he wouldn't have been a Simon Zebo. Maybe he would have been a greater athlete. Maybe he would have been whatever. But, you know, that fight, that row, that you know, nagging our kids about their Leaving Certs and people feeling inadequate that they're going to fail. I failed my Leaving Cert, and I have a degree from University of Illinois Chicago. I have a HDiff from UCC. I have five other accolades and certificates, and I failed.
That's kind of like a plea to parents, really, isn't it?
But I'm playing everybody. I'm playing. I want to go through the cracks of the windows, under the door, through the open door, the schools that will let me in. I speak to people in the corporate world about mental health as well. And it's one of the things that I do, using what God gave me, a voice and a natural gift for storytelling. But also, knowing Irby left me a lot of work to do as well, when I can do it, when I'm able.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't able to go to a service this weekend for another person who chose to die by suicide. I physically wasn't able to go. Because my own emotions want to surface too close.
It comes back.
And I knew.
Yeah.
And I knew I wouldn't be able to do this. I wouldn't be able to do the work I need to do. So I stayed home and I cooked the food and I stayed in my pajamas half the day. And I cooked what I was my healthy food. And I went for a run with a friend and a walk for.
And now you've got to run 56 miles, I'm told.
Well, not 56 because I did 10 on the first. So I did 10 miles on the first, and then I did 2 yesterday. So that's 12 done already. Today,
you Americans, you make me laugh with your miles. It's kilometers, woman. 90 kilometers you have to do. 90.
I didn't make it up, honey. Peterhouse did. Don't be blaming me for what they did. 56 miles.
Either way, you have 10 of them done already, in fairness.
I have 12 of them done already.
12 done. Well done.
12 done already. Well done. Yeah. So... it's debatable. I'm smothered now today with a cold, and I'm just doing a bit of, like I said, admin work for social media. I'm going to be starting to book gigs again. I wasn't able to perform, Neil. I was so, for the first time in a long, I wasn't able to perform because I would have given my sadness to the people, my punters, and that's not fair either, you know?
I know.
So it's like today I had my little wobbly today here with you on the phone, but listen, peeps, I'm all right. I'm all right. And that's sometimes I'm all right and sometimes I'm great, you know, like the rest of us.
I can imagine caring what you do.
Yeah.
Listen,
each
day as it comes, if anybody would like and is moved by my conversation with Karen, and who wouldn't be, you can also help www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Karen, and they can give to Pieta House to help them in their terrific work. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely right. They have a great track record, and they do meet people on the ground. And that's whether you have like suicidal ideation or self-harming, or you have a plan, or you have postpartum. They have a lot of work. They reach out to people. And right now, honey, when I went into the shop and I wanted to buy 4 kiwis, and they were €3, people don't have money for mental health. They just don't have it.
I know.
You know, it's important to have forces on the ground like Peter House. The media on board, like you, Neil, and I really appreciate it.
Not at all.
Love to your family. Love to Paula, Luke, and Kathy. And, you know, and I'm okay to Christiana out there. I know mommy had just a mini wobbly, not yours to carry.
I haven't seen Christiana in years now. Will you pass her on my best wishes?
I sure will, my darling. I sure will. She's doing a mighty job doing her vocal coaching. That's what she does. And She has her own social media life and a vocal life as well.
So, you're wonderful. Yeah. Good luck with the rest of the challenge. Come back to me when it's complete, will you, so that we can update with people.
I will. And also, just because it's €1,000, don't mean we can't break the ceiling on it.
Okay, let's get people, let's drive traffic your way. Thanks. Take care for now, Karen.
Thanks, Neil.
Bye, take care.
All the best.
Bye, Karen Underwood, her 56-mile challenge across February. You know, everything helps, and that's... something that she's undertaken herself. Perhaps you might think of a challenge for yourself to help with regards to Pieta. Anyway, www.justgiving.com, fundraising/Karen. Text 0868104106. Just a quick one after the break. Hang in there.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Your thoughts are welcome. Get involved in the conversation. Text 0868104106. Monday Munchies of a Tuesday with the Old Mill Confectionery. Morning to everybody. EDC Engineering in Blackpool. The team could do with a sweet lift this morning. They love cakes. Morning to Martin and all the gang. Murray Properties in Mayfield would love to win. Everybody at LD Distribution in Mitchelstown, Kathy and Margaret Ann and all of the co-workers, to everybody in Shine, our son goes to school there, they're amazing, they deserve some munchies for all the wonderful work they do. Godfrey Kirby Car Dismantling could do with treats to start the week. M&P O'Sullivan Cash and Carry Out in Duclóin, love the show. To everybody at Cove Community Hospital, for all the staff and residents, for a bit of cheer on a miserable day. Ryan Civil Engineering in Kinsale would love to be fed. So Stylish, SEW. The curtain makers in Bishopstown, they love the Old Mill cakes. Who doesn't? Canavie National School would share with all the teaching staff, and also the Ray of Sunshine Children Care Team. Pest Attack in the Lock, Robin Hill Clinic in Cove, Satellite Taxis on Pollardoff Road are listening. Sean Dennehy Commercials working hard, would love a treat in the rain. Cope Foundation, Aradara in Montanati would love a pick-me-up on a cold, wet and windy day. The lads are very fond of the Old Mill cakes, especially the Chester. On Post staff working hard in this weather, particularly the South City office in Toker. Satellite Taxis and all of the staff on the Pollardoff Road. And the gang at Elegance Florists in Cross Douglas Road looking forward to Valentine's Day with beautiful bouquets on display. There's a lot of them. Zorica, Debbie, Christine, Victoria, and the delivery drivers, Kian and Tony. So all of the staff. I'm out of time for shout-outs. I need to pick a winner for the Monday Munchies and get ourselves sorted so the Red Patrollers can stock up with the cakes from the Old Mill Confectionery and get them out to... Oh, it's one of the last texts I read out. Shout-out. Cakes on the way to the gang at Elegance Florists on the Cross Douglas Road. Don't forget to send us a photograph. You don't have to send flowers or anything. That's all very well. But do enjoy the cakes. There's a lot of you there. So enjoy the cakes this lunchtime from the Old Mill Confectionery. The Red Patrollers will have them to you at lunchtime. A lot of texts on different topics of conversation this morning, which we'll pick up in the morning. My apologies to people who didn't get on the air this morning. I will pick up on that and everybody else first thing in the morning. Ciara Evans is here from midday. She's got Ciara, get me to the gig. So it's your chance to win tickets for Natasha Bedingfield. But more importantly, the support for Natasha Bedingfield is Stephanie Rainey, live at the Marquee this summer. So listen in for that. All other business, we'll pick it up in the morning. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.